Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show.
Yes, it's time for Green Scene, and with us is Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. And today we are talking, first and foremost, carbon offset and carbon offsetting of flights.
Yeah, and I guess over the summer, Anton, I think many people left the country for the first time in a while. And you might have noticed when you were booking your flight that airlines will give you an option to tick a box and say, look, I'd like to pay a few extra euros, and that will compensate for the carbon, you know, maybe the 200 kilograms of carbon that's going to be put into the atmosphere by me going on a plane to Spain. So it sounds nice. It's a nice idea that a few euro can offset that carbon.
How?
Well, I mean, the idea of carbon offsetting is simple and potentially doable. So the idea is that 200 kilograms of carbon that is emitted by you taking that flight, you know, that you pay some money to somebody who does something additional and new to take carbon out of the atmosphere. Now, a lot of those projects are about either protecting trees that are would be cut down or planting new trees, maybe providing cooking stoves to countries where they cook on open fires to reduce emissions. So that's the idea behind it. Those projects will then take out the carbon that your flight put into the atmosphere.
One assumes that is a tricky thing to audit and to confirm.
Well, you've kind of gone straight to the nub of the matter, Anton, because the point is anyone can kind of set up a carbon project. There's no real regulation around it at the moment. And in fact, a lot of scientific studies have shown that the vast majority of these offset projects are not actually doing what's kind of been sold on the tin. And there's a number of different reasons of this. I mean, one of the biggest ones is some of these projects would just happen anyway. So, you know, there's things like renewable energy projects that might be contributed to, but they were going to happen anyway. There's forests that weren't actually going to be cut down, which you're contributing to. So these are the kind of issues that we're seeing in the overall carbon offsetting market. And carbon offsetting is a big part of companies' plans to be carbon neutral, you know, particularly airlines.
Well, I was going to ask in the aviation sector, because the aviation sector is to some degree in a bit of a corner. Other sectors can try innovative fuels and can try other methods of power. But for aviation, there's not much you can do other than kerosene.
I mean, there are alternatives. I think they will come. I mean, we have seen, I think, the first electric plane flying, but I think they're a long way off. So, I mean, I think for aviation, the idea of well done offsets may need to be part of the solution. And I look again, this is technically possible. And if it was done well, you know, it could be part of a solution. I mean, the issue is what we don't want to do is say, well, look, we can fix this by offsetting. So off you go, do whatever you want. We don't actually have to change our behavior, because that's kind of, you know, deep down, we all know that we can't do that. But it's a nice idea. But I think if you are going to do carbon offsetting, there is a standard called Gold Standard, which some scientists have looked at and said that looks pretty good. Both Aer Lingus and Ryanair work with at least one provider that does offer some Gold Standard carbon offsetting. So, I mean, my view is I would probably still do it. And at the moment, most people don't. Only about 1% of people are doing any offsetting at all with their flights. So I think if we could all demand better regulation around offsetting, I would still do it.
And can
now
you offset the totality of the carbon emission of your flight, or is it just a small percentage of it?
It depends. You can decide to do the full offset. So you can go to a website like Pure Leapfrog and they will calculate the full emissions and you can do it. Again, the question is, you know, is it permanent? Is it definitely additional? I mean, I think those things are all a little bit grey. I think it's better to think about that as a contribution to projects which you're probably supporting, rather than as directly sort of paying back the carbon that your flight has used up, because we don't want to distract from the bigger issues.
Meanwhile, stark warnings coming out about the sustainability and future of coral reefs around the country. Warnings that by 2050 we could have lost 90% of the living reefs.
I know. And reefs are such an iconic kind of piece of nature whenever we think about the blue planet and all the diversity there. And reefs house a huge amount of the diversity in the ocean, and they also do capture carbon. But actually, a bit of good news on coral reefs. We've talked before about some small artificial reefs in Indonesia that we're putting in, and we were actually seeing great recovery. And also in marine reserves, big sharks coming back, you know, big creatures coming back, which was great to see. But this is actually just some news that came out in New Scientist about a company that is planning to go big. They are hoping to put in 2,500 enormous artificial reefs in the next sort of number of decades. So they're planning to use, you know, used up building material, slag from concrete production, to create these modular reefs, which will help to recreate environments. Now, they're not as good as protecting what we have, but it is certainly something that we have seen working in the past.
This is always an area that fascinates me, because artificial reef can often be a euphemism for big sunk warship or
yes.
bits of bridge that we stuffed in the sea. But do they have the same effect on biodiversity as a naturally existing coral reef? Obviously, you don't have coral polyps, but you have the same structures and the same kind of life comes in and around it?
Yeah, I mean, look, nothing is going to be exactly the same. But the reality is coral polyps will go and colonise places like these if they're put in the right conditions and if we can manage to keep the oceans at reasonable levels of temperature and cleanliness. And in fact, another breakthrough this week with scientists in Australia was they managed for the first time to get corals to spawn in captivity. Now, coral spawning is a very kind of rare and delicate thing. You need a full moon, you need the right temperatures. But using kind of special artificial light, they've managed to now grow corals in captivity. So again, there's aspirations. If we can manage to sort of reduce the impact that we're having, we're coming up now with some of the technologies that with a bit of time, maybe we can help to restore.
And I as far as I understand it, time is a significant issue for coral reefs, because it is only the very tip that has the living polyp, and it takes a long time for it to construct the
That's
undercoral,
right.
doesn't it?
Yes, and of course, you know, we expect to, you know, we've had a lot of bleaching of things like the Barrier Reef. But again, you know, we are looking at the genetic makeup of corals. You know, can we modify them to help them cope better with these stresses? So, you know, while science isn't the answer, it doesn't give us a free pass to keep doing what we're doing. It's absolutely part of the solution, you know, as we try to cut down our impact on the planet.
And given how often there is negative news about all things environmental, it is nice to hear a bit of positivity.
And we have to have hope, Anton, because, you know, it's a pretty dire situation, but we have to have hope, because if we don't have hope, we won't take action.
Thank you very much, Ruth. That is Dr. Ruth Freeman, who is Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.